This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Where were they going, Rick? What was the thinking? What was the long-term plan? Or were they just trying to do what Grant ultimately did with the Confederate forces and just sort of wear down this army?
That's a great question, and I looked it up because I knew you were going to ask me that question so that I could answer it with all the right information. There's a lot of reasons, but it took Robert E. Lee a while to convince Jefferson Davis that it was the right thing to do. But here are the main reasons. Number one, it takes the war out of Virginia for a while. By using the Shenandoah Valley and then going up into Maryland and Pennsylvania via the Cumberland Valley, it's very rich in foodstuffs, livestock, horses. So think of it in one aspect as a raid into rich terrain in Maryland and in Pennsylvania, from which the Confederate forces, the Army of Northern Virginia under Robert E. Lee, brought back a lot of foodstuffs, a lot of grain, a lot of beef cattle, a lot of horses. Horses very important to the army, of course. A lot used in the cavalry, but a lot used in the artillery. When you think that in terms of every cannon that you maneuver on the field, you have at least 12 horses per cannon.
Wow.
That's a lot of horses just in the artillery alone, aside from the
cavalry. That have to be fed and cared for.
That's right. Yeah. So think in terms of getting the war out of Virginia, bringing a lot of foodstuffs, beef cattle, and horses back from Maryland and Pennsylvania, and then also hoping to win a victory in the north on the other side of the Mason-Dixon line, because there's a growing anti-war faction in the Midwest. They're getting tired of the war. This was known as the Copperhead Movement. There's actually a party rising up to oppose the Lincoln administration. These were powerful at the time, and there was hope that a victory on the other side of the Mason-Dixon line would cause, you know, the rest of the country to go, that's it, we've had it. Look, we can't even win victories in Virginia, and now we're losing battles in our territory. I mean, how ridiculous is this?
So they were hoping for a stalemate then, and
that's right, because all they need is a stalemate. The Confederacy doesn't really need to win any terrain. It just needs to wear down the North into giving up, and they've won. Also, there was, you know, hope of getting official recognition, especially from Britain, of the Confederacy. There was unofficial recognition, but the thing is to get official recognition of England and perhaps some other countries by winning a victory in Northern territory and taking the war, and I reiterating, taking the war out of Virginia for a while, giving Virginia farmers a rest.
Right.
With 200,000 men out of Central Virginia, you know, scrounging around someplace else, you know, not stealing foodstuffs, you know, not raiding the hen houses and doing all those things in Central Virginia, but in another state for a while.
So that's the summer of 1863 is the Battle of Gettysburg.
That's the summer of 1863. And then in the process, Lincoln gets rid of Hooker and places George Gordon Meade in his stead. So now Meade is at the helm of the Army of the Potomac facing Robert E. Lee. Then coming back, they kind of settle into a position where the Union Army is focused outside of, in and around Culpeper, and the Confederate Army is to the south of the Rappahannock and the Rapidan, which is just south of Culpeper. So that gets us to this point.
In the early summer of
1864. So now think of all the failed attempts against Richmond and the Army of the Potomac. There have been at least four. We've talked about all of them. One culminated in First Manassas. One culminated in the Peninsula Campaign. One culminated at the Battle of Fredericksburg. Another culminated at the Battle of Chancellorsville.
All of these efforts on the part of the North to break through Confederate lines and take Richmond.
And
they all failed.
Or destroy Lee's army.
Yeah.
So now, all of a sudden, with Meade at the head of the Army of the Potomac, Lincoln decides to place Ulysses S. Grant at the head of all of the armies. So Grant has a choice of where to place his headquarters. And he decides, since the Army of the Potomac has not tallied up a large number of victories against Robert E. Lee. He places his headquarters with Meade's Army of the Potomac. So a lot of people are confused about this and think that Grant was actually leading the Army of the Potomac. Meade still was, and you almost have to envy, you almost have to feel sorry for Meade for being in this position. His immediate superior in charge of all of the Union war effort, directly under Abraham Lincoln, Ulysses S. Grant, is from now to the end of the war looking over his shoulder. But Ulysses S. Grant, brought from the West where he had been aggressive, brought from the West where he had beaten Confederate armies, is now at the Wilderness facing Robert E. Lee for the very first time.
Is this Lincoln's smartest decision so far in the war to bring Grant from the West to Virginia?
It's certainly, well, no, it's Grant's choice to place his headquarters. He could have stayed in Washington. Grant could have stayed at Washington. It's not Lincoln's choice that Grant kind of escort or shepherd the Army of the Potomac around. It's Grant's choice, and that's a really wise choice. Bringing Grant east from west by the Lincoln administration, placing him in charge of the entire war effort, that's a brilliant choice. Because yeah. Grant is the guy, ultimately, who can come up with a plan and has the stomach, like we've talked about it, has the guts to do what has to be done.
We're talking with Rick Britton. He's online at rickbritton.com. So here we are now, the early summer of 1864.
Right. So let's paint a picture now. And of all the confusing battles in the Civil War, the Wilderness is perhaps the most confusing. So let me paint a mental picture.
Because it was all in the woods, right?
Yeah, it's in the wilderness, and it's all heavily wooded with just a few random clearings, not really enough to make an entirely big difference. So here's what it looks like. We're just south of the Rapidan and the Rappahannock. In the middle is Wilderness Tavern that's in a clearing on the Germanna Plank Road, or the Plank Road. So imagine that road.
Which is Route 3.
Which is basically Route 3,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It changes a lot. But imagine that road going from the northwest to the southeast, running laterally across our map. The entire area, except for some scattered clearings, is heavily wooded, is the wilderness. So the wilderness covers the entire map that we're looking at. This road runs laterally, northwest to southeast. Then imagine two other roads bisecting it, intersecting with it, running from the southwest to the northeast and hitting it. And they're about 2 miles apart. And that's really everything you need to know about the map of the wilderness. On May 4th, Grant decided that he was going to launch the Overland Campaign. He was going to launch that year's campaign against Robert E. Lee. And now you notice I said Grant. From now on, we're going to forget about Meade, because Grant is making a lot of these decisions and telling Meade, do this.
Yeah.
Meade is complaining, and poor Meade, but he kind of gets left out of the rest of the war. Grant decides he's going to open this overland campaign against Robert E. Lee. So he moves down the Plank Road into the wilderness, and they focus around the Wilderness Tavern, this huge army of over 100,000, about 110,000 men. And they halt and wait for some of their supply wagons to catch up with them. This is a constant problem when our armies are on the move. You can't just take off through difficult terrain and outstrip your supply trains. All of a sudden, the guys start getting hungry. The next thing, after they're getting hungry and you don't feed them, they wander away from the army looking for somebody else who will feed them or something else that they can steal. And, of course, that disperses the army. You don't want to do that. So you want to keep the guys fed. You want to keep them happy.
Yeah.
So they wait there. While they're there, Robert E. Lee sees an amazing opportunity. The opportunity is he's only got about 61,000 men. So they outnumber him 110 to about 61,000. So it's not quite 2-1. But in the wilderness, with only a few open clearings and only a few major roads, Robert E. Lee has a chance to actually attack Grant, and his numbers, his advantage numerically, won't be as obvious. Plus, number one, the cavalry that the Union forces outnumber the Confederate forces in won't be as usable. So the cavalry, one of the advantages then he immediately takes away from Ulysses S. Grant. Another big advantage that Grant has is in artillery. Well, with only a few clearings and you're only able to unlimber a couple of guns and fire down a major road, that removes another one of Grant's advantages over Robert E. Lee. So the best place, if Lee's going to attack Grant while he's moving laterally across his front, is in the wilderness.
Lee was smart, wasn't he? He really was a smart guy.
He's an amazingly smart guy. Yeah. He's probably, Robert E. Lee would certainly be in the top five most brilliant military men that this country has ever produced. I think Washington is right there, of course, and we'd go in, you know, we'd get into other wars, we talk about the others, but Robert E. Lee is right there. Yeah, he's brilliant. So up those two roads that stretch from the southwest to the northeast and hit the plank road as it cuts through the wilderness laterally, Robert E. Lee actually attacks, outnumbered almost 2-1. Now, the rest of the fighting over the rest of the few days is totally confused. And here's the reason why. Think of taking a line of men in an open clearing. Say you've got a line of 1,000 men in an open clearing. Their colonel's out front. You march them into the heavily, densely wooded wilderness. First thing that happens is the generals, the colonels, even in some cases the captains who are in command of companies, completely lose track of their men. You can't.
It's chaos.
You can't stay in touch with them.
Yeah.
The generals can't stay in touch with the colonels. The colonels can't stay in touch with the captains. That's why actually this fight is called a sergeant's fight, because the sergeants were fighting out there. The sergeants were about the highest rank that the men that could actually stay in direct contact with their own men. So it's confused. There's attacks and counterattacks back through the wilderness. Towards the end of the fighting, Longstreet sees an opportunity and actually launches a flank attack against Grant's left flank. And interestingly enough, Longstreet is wounded, and at the time they feared mortally wounded, within 5 miles of where Stonewall Jackson had been mortally wounded.
Oh, wow.
And almost exactly 1 year later. So people were saying, oh my gosh, how amazing is this? Longstreet survived. A number of generals were killed in this confused fighting. In one of the clearings, Robert E. Lee, just as the Texas Brigade was coming up in reinforcement, Robert E. Lee offered to lead them forward in an attack. And of course, the guys totally lost it, because the last thing they want is their army commander to be leading them in an infantry assault across this small clearing. So the men told Lee that they would charge, but only if he stayed back and watched them, that they would not attack if he was going to lead them, because it was too risky. That gives you an idea of how the men adored Robert E. Lee. In the end, it's a draw. But the amazing difference, and the reason this is so important, it's the first contest between Ulysses S. Grant and Robert E. Lee. About 17,000 federal casualties, about 7,000 Confederate casualties, which is amazing when you consider that Robert E. Lee was on the offensive at the very beginning. In the end, it's a draw in that confusion of the wilderness, and a portion of the woods caught on fire. Numbers of the wounded were killed because they got trapped in this forest fire. In the end, though, the big difference is Grant kept coming. And he starts moving.
First Union leader to do that.
Right, to do that.
To not stop and make camp.
That's right. He kept going. Or not retreat across the river. He kept coming. And so we'll talk about that.
All the difference.
All the difference in the world.
Rick Britton, he's online at rickbritton.com. Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.